Maria the Doctor.
Who knows what may come next?
All right, Kings of Leon, they're in the country. It's fair to say they are probably the biggest band of the last 12 months. Number one in the hottest 100. What have they got to say for themselves? Let's find out.
You're on Triple J with Robbie, Marique and the Doctor, and we are in a fancy hotel room with a couple of gentlemen who, it's fair to say, have been all over the frickin' place this year. We're talking about Caleb and Jared from Kings of Leon.
Hello.
Hi. How are you feeling? Well?
Yeah.
A little sleepy.
I kind of need a drink. Yeah. I'm feeling all right.
It's about that time.
Well, the sun's over the yardarm somewhere in the world. Have you heard that expression before?
No, we have, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. That's what we're saying.
Very good point.
There you go. Now we're cross-cultural references.
Look at that. That's
swapping good. Them all.
We're sort of, we're giving and taking. So you guys came to Australia with the intention of playing a bunch of shows. You know, you sort of made it into the big time. And then when you got here, you got asked to do one show for free. Did you ever, at one point when the Sound Relief was put to use, guys, just think, nah, we're not going to do that?
No, I think, you know, obviously the fact that we were going to be over here, it was our honor to do it. It was great. It was just, you know, it was one of those things where we had a show that night, so we had to do something that we normally don't do, which is wake up and play fairly early in the day for us. And, you know, for us, we usually have a drink before we play, so we would have to open the wine pretty early.
Oh, it's a hard life thing. Yeah. Is it drinking during the day?
Well,
what next?
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Or maybe in that case, it's 1:30 somewhere. One thing, the day before Sound Relief, you guys said that you weren't going to play Sex on Fire, of course, out of respect for the conditions which arose, which is why Sound Relief was on. But when the show went to pay television, in the intros to the show, they were showing some scenes of the devastation in the bushfires around Victoria, and one of the songs they used for that opening montage was Sex on Fire.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, we didn't know what to do. I mean, you know, obviously we wanted to play it because it was such a big hit over here, but, you know, it just seemed like it was out of line for us to do so. And after we finished, the crowd was going, one more song, but it sounded like they were going, sex on fire.
I think maybe half of them were saying that.
Yeah.
But, so, I mean, it was like a world event, you know, like it's something that everybody around the globe had heard of, and it was a devastating thing. So, you know, for a band like us to be able to help out in any way, you know, it was kind of a rare opportunity. The last thing we wanted to do was, you know, offend, you know, the country by being insensitive, you know.
It's fair to say this is the record that's really broken you in a lot of places, or made it really big, and it's a very different sound, I think, to when you were first starting out. Do you think there's pressure on you now to emulate that for the next record, or really sort of maintain that?
No, I mean, I don't know if that's what we want, you know. It's kind of a cool thing because early on in our career, we made our first album, and they always say that you have the sophomore slump and you can't make a second album that's better than your first one. And in my opinion, we did.
Yeah, take a break.
And now this record's gone to such a different level that the next album to a lot of people is like our second album, you know, so we get to try to do it again. But, you know, I think we just want to make a better album than this album. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we want to have a bunch of radio hits on it. We want to have songs and an album that we're really proud of.
Does it feel at any stage too big? Do you ever feel like pulling it back a bit? Do you feel any sort of mounting hysteria?
Not yet.
Happy with the level of hysteria?
Yeah, it's fine. Just because, I mean, truthfully, it's not like it used to be. You know, as hysterical as things can get, you're so sheltered from it, you know?
Do you think that, like, not being sheltered and being able to sort of go out into clubs and there's a few people that know you and they buy you a drink and
stuff? Kind of. I feel like First Kid or something, or like all those movies about, like, the young, I mean, I don't know, you guys probably don't have this here, but
what was the movie?
Movies? What is this strange concept of which you speak?
No, but like Matthew and I sneak out all the time. Like, we'll, Dave, our big security guy,
get, like, just a secret bite to eat at night or something.
Yeah, we went down and got some ice cream last night, and we never get recognized, so it doesn't really matter, you know. And I feel like people are so worried that we're gonna get recognized, and it just doesn't really happen.
Or do you get jealous because maybe it's harder for you to go out, Caleb?
It's funny because it's like I don't know. You know, if I put on a hat or if I put on sunglasses, I feel like you'll stand out more, you know.
Especially if it's a comedy hat or a big sunglasses with googly eyes coming out.
No, it's not so bad. I mean, yesterday...
You can't wear your own merch when you go. I'm sorry, Caleb.
I did call those paparazzis for you yesterday.
And it worked. Good thing.
There you go. Kings of Leon and Caleb and Jared from the band having a chat to Marique and the Doctor. More of that coming up very soon for you this morning on Triple J. Kings of Leon in the country. They've got another couple of dates to play in Sydney tonight at the Entertainment Centre and then Saturday night at Acer Arena. And then Sunday they're playing Newcastle at the Entertainment Centre there as well. But let's take you into a hotel room.
It's time to go back.
With Caleb and Jared from the Kings of Leon.
On Triple J. I want to talk to you, Caleb. You're a huge fan of Townes Van Zandt, who is an amazing musician, and he, quite famously drank himself to death. I'm just curious about the romanticism attached to drinking and music, and I mean, obviously, alcohol's a huge part of Kings of Leon. It's always mentioned in interviews about sources of arguments. And do you sometimes feel that the two are inextricably linked, the booze and the creative process?
No, I mean, I think for. It depends on who the artist is. For me, whenever I have a few drinks and I sit down to write some lyrics, I feel like I'm a little more honest than if I were just stone sober. But, I mean, there are artists that don't drink and don't do any kind of extracurricular activities, and they do fine. But, I mean, you know, I think for me, it's like a security blanket, and I want to have a drink before I do that. I don't. That doesn't mean that I don't think I could do it without. Because a lot of times I'll write lyrics and the next day I'll wake up and, you know, there's a few chunks of it that are good. And then there are some that the night before were brilliant, but they once you're sober, it's like, wait, that's terrible. What do you? So I have to clean it up, you know, when I'm sober. But I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of great artists, you know, they had struggles in their lives, and that's what... you know, made them write some of those songs that you only truly get whenever you've had a night out like that and you hear the lyrics and it's like, oh, I know exactly what you mean.
Is there sometimes the need to seek out painful experiences? I mean, Townes had a pretty difficult life and wrote incredibly beautiful music. Do you sometimes think there's a destructive part of you that's drawn towards that in order to make the better music?
I don't know. You know, I think a lot of these questions they could probably answer better than me.
we were.
Is he bad?
No, I mean, I think being a musician is one of the only professions that you start your career in bars. I mean, that's your job is in a bar.
Or a bartender, I guess.
Yeah, totally. That's why I said one of a few. But, yeah, so when we first started, we played, you know, 200 shows a year, and we were playing them all in bars, and you can't really be in a bar without drinking, or it's just awkward, you know? So I think that it just kind of sets you up to be an alcoholic, and I think that's why... I mean, I don't think we're alcoholics, but I think that's why musicians, you know, become
the way
they
are. It's coming soon. The first drink's coming soon.
We're talking to the Kings of Leon. We have Caleb and we have Jared here. You were saying before that for a lot of people, the next album you make is going to be your sophomore record, which means for a lot of people, they're going to go back and discover all the music you recorded before the album that's out now. So that's kind of how you guys were brought up. Because you were brought up not listening to rock and roll. And so you guys got to go back and discover all this music. What was it like going back and, you know, as an adult, discovering, you know, music that people you meet have known for years? Like stuff like the Rolling Stones and the Beatles or, you know.
Oh, it was great. I think it's so good to be able to do it and, you know, you experience music when it's not like the big hype, you know. And you go back and you discover something and it's like, man, who is Sly and Family Stone or who is the band? And... And
well, you guys would have discovered U2 long after all they stopped writing good music.
We discovered U2 when we were on tour with U2. It was
that's
literally,
how most people discover U2, to be fair, you know, really.
Well, the real U2.
No, it was strange. Like we would be at, you know, obviously after we played, we'd go out and watch them, and we'd be like, wow, that's their song. And that's it. And then after so many hits, it's like, wow, man, this band is, you know, this was a good call to go on tour with them.
Do you still have that insatiable curiosity? Like, are you still seeking things out? There's not a part of you that's jaded, so there's still, the music lovers in you all are still discovering music?
I think, yeah, we definitely always discover music. I mean, and, you know, like what he was saying, it's just so much better as an adult because you miss out. Like, there's so many things that can influence your opinion on a band and, you know, with hype. And so we go back and look at bands without bias, you know.
And you're also not discovering bands as a 10-year-old and just wanting to get their autograph and stick the poster up on the window.
Yeah, absolutely.
So going back and hearing the Pixies or the Talking Heads or all these different, like, these weird, obscure kinds of music or the Velvet Underground, you just hear it in a different way. And it
blows. And you've got an excuse as well, unlike, you know, people like me that just chose not to listen to it. Too busy listening to Guns N' Roses.
Triple J. Caleb and Jared from the Kings of Leon hanging out in a hotel room with Marique and the Doctor, and don't go anywhere.
There's more coming up, in fact. We're going to be talking Caleb, Jared, and Zach.
Zach
Efron.
Close your eyes just for a second.
Okay.
Now, imagine that you're sitting in a hotel room with two famous rock stars, Caleb and Jared from the Kings of Leon.
I am.
You imagining it?
I am.
On Triple J.
Just before we let you guys go, I know that you guys have been very busy in Australia with your own concerts, and which you have. I think you're in Sydney tonight, that being Thursday night, and then moving on to other parts of Australia. All the dates are up in the Triple J gig guide. But you still had time to play poker with Zac Efron.
Yeah, we.
Did he win? Did Zac Efron win?
He did. It came down to me and him. We met him at a show in L.A. and we heard he was in town. So, and he likes to play poker, and we like to play poker.
Was it strict poker? No, it was
a money game. It was. And Texas Joe,
how disappointing.
Joe Hasham was there. There were two pros there.
He's the champion, Joe.
Yeah,
Hasham.
And
everyone wants to see him naked.
And it came down to me and Zac Efron.
Right,
and
so you beat Hasham, man.
Yeah.
Well, Zac Efron took me and Hasham out in one hand, so we tied for third. Yeah, he.
You've seen him as an amazing poker player, Zac Efron.
Well, he's amazing. He got one really good hand that took me and Hasham out.
Well, he actually plays a lot, and he plays in L.A., and he can do all that stuff with the chips and make it look cool. But still, I just got drunk and let him beat me.
Do you know what his hand was that beat you?
Well, I know for a fact that he wasn't drinking, and I think that...
That's the problem.
...is bullshit.
See, that's because he's a Hollywood kid and you're rock and rollers.
Yeah, I mean, everyone at the table was drinking except for him.
And you know how hard it is to, you know, bluff him? You get sucked into his eyes.
You do.
His dreamy eyes.
Yeah. And then suddenly into his abs.
And he breaks out into song at the most inopportune time. I would like another card, please. That's the High School Musical 3.
No, I got it. Poker.
On Triple J.